the band in the arena. It's over there. I know our guys have gone and got cardboard goodies that will be ensure that they're not, you know, it's not going to get crinkled when you take it home. So go and buy yourself one for $250 and you can remember exactly what Ian said now. And we didn't plan it. Thank you for doing that, Ian. Thank you also for being so early. You know, last time we were in at our 10th birthday, Ian was just fascinating. And I think by the end of it, we didn't have much time for questions. But today, the question number one is, you are a hero to so many people across the spectrum. Why are you now joining those people that we love to hate in politics?
So that's well put. So there are many, many different questions around this. I think for the past 15 years, I've been very actively involved in the civil rights space, specifically regarding violent crime, and it was across the spectrum. The last just about 3 years was mainly focused on violent crime in some parts of specifically the Cape Flats, but also other really bad township areas, looking at how we can mobilize communities within the framework of the law and also then help them to do oversight on violent crime cases. I think this morning's example is actually very good to use. You know, 61 people shot and killed in one area just in 1 week. For a civil rights entity alone to take that on is almost impossible. You know, we see the provincial commission in the Western Cape. He's been spending his time in Saldanha in court, and it's good that he shows support. There's nothing wrong with that, but he should be waging war against gangsters in the Cape Flats and not sitting in court. That's not his job. And I think to me, it's an opportunity to influence policy quite a bit more, because you can only do that much in terms of what we were doing. And I think for me, it's a fantastic opportunity to take on some of these policy issues more directly. And I really hope, you know, first of all, I'm not changing as a person. And I'm excited about the fact that there's a bit of a opportunity to marry parts of civil society activities and even political activities. You know, there shouldn't be this great divide. It's important that neither of the two operate in silos, and we need to take that on. Again, Alec, I think in terms of the DA specifically, it was a great privilege for me to represent the DA yesterday in Fuleni, and it you know, what I find very exciting is the depth in the party. What I find very exciting is the administrative and logistical depth. A lot of people talk about just establishing parties and they want to go to an election. But, you know, if you go look in the Second World War as a good example, and you look at the Russians and the Germans, both made the mistake of extending their attack so much that their logistics and admin couldn't keep up. It eventually, they really got hurt because of that. And it's very much the same in this. In my opinion, you would like to have a good, solid administrative and logistical foundation in order to be strong operationally. So I'm excited about that. And it's really fantastic for me to see, especially in some of these so-called red zone areas where you face serious problems, to see the excitement about potential change. And I would love to be part of that.
And so where are you on the list? In other words, are you definitely going to Parliament?
So the chances are good. I've just been told I'm high on the list. I haven't seen the final list, so it'll be made public, I think, within the week. Probably, or at the end of the month, I'm told. I just know the chances are pretty good. It leaked a little bit before I had all the information, so I was caught off guard slightly. But I'm glad it went the way that it did, and it's also made it a bit easier to transition. But nevertheless, the chances are good, and it's high specifically for National Assembly.
There's a feeling that the DA plays by the Marquess of Queensbury rules. In other words, takes a knife to a gunfight. You know the rough side of society. Are you going to play by different rules in politics?
Well, I'll follow the rules. I don't believe in the, you know, often rules are meant to be broken, but it's funny, a lot of the people that say that are the ones not willing to break them, And I've broken many of the rules, especially in the civil society space, and spoken out. I mean, just here in Hermanus, there's still a case of crimen injuria against me with the district commander here, because I said that, you know, she's been in the police for 13 years and she's got no operational experience whatsoever. She failed every single commander course that she could do. But hey, she's now the district commander for the abalone poaching kingdom of South Africa. Again, ANC legacy. But, I'll continue speaking out about those types of things, and they can continue opening their cases. It's fine. I think just in terms of the DA, the knife to a gunfight, and I want to specifically speak about the crime fight. I spent a lot of time with a gang and drug unit of Cape Town Metro Police. And maybe it's too literal, but they certainly do not take a knife to a gunfight. I know that's not what you mean. I'm just saying that if I look at the way that they are trained and the way that they attack the problem and the way that they move into areas that are hostile, it really impresses me. And it's something that I don't see from any national government entity at the moment. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how the whole idea about federalism really plays out. I'm not the expert on that. I know that devolution needs to happen and devolving power will make a massive impact. Again, last night's murders are a good example of things that could possibly be prevented.
It wasn't long ago, in August actually, that we were looking out over the sea and we saw poachers. Physically there in front of you, there were guys, abalone poachers. What did you do?
You know what I did.
I know what you did, but okay, what would you do differently as a member of parliament?
No, I wouldn't do much differently. I'd add the question in parliament, but I would encourage the community to go have a braai with the poachers, in front of the poachers. You know, it's something in Paul at the moment. There's a street in Paul called St. Francis Street with a massive, massive tick house. All the cops know in Paul that they sell tick and other drugs there. Everyone knows this, but we know that a lot of the cops are in the pockets of the gangsters that supply the drugs to that house. So I said to the neighborhood watch, well, if you get so fed up, let's have a street braai for 48 hours in front of the house. And if the cops or the municipality want to remove you, say remove the drug dealers first. We don't need to get into direct confrontation. I think the idea is not necessarily to have violent conflict. What I'm saying is that we need to start dominating our own spaces. When they start poaching on the foreshore and there's huge rocks in front and there's a space for the community to actually do something positive there, why not take up that space? But we need to change our thinking, and we also need to get rid, and it excites me to see how City of Cape Town is approaching it. We need to stop thinking about this constant state mentality that everything is the state. There's so much that we can do to take up and dominate our own spaces. I always say to people, people say, thank you for saying things that we can't say. You can say it, and the more people say it, the smaller the chances of any of us being intimidated. So if 100 people show up and there are 50 poachers in the water and we say, we're going to have a street braai and the whole neighborhood watch shows up and there's no direct contact, but we're braaiing there, it might sound like a silly example, but we're starting to control and dominate our spaces. This morning I was running. I know I'm built for comfort, not speed. But I was running in Hermanus and close to where the Shell garage is, there were poachers. They were diving there and there were two poachers standing on the side of the grass. I don't know what they were pointing at. I think the abalone left in Hermanus is too small to poach in any case. But, you know, they were openly doing what they do. And I honestly think that in a lawful way, there's so much more that we could do. So I'll continue to encourage people with that. I will never, ever, ever stop encouraging civil society. Civil society and free media. Biz News is a good example, Alec. If we don't have that partnership to make sure that we speak out, then we've got a lot to be worried about.
So what's your agenda?
My agenda is the police. I'm the last year especially, the amount of cops that has not only have become friends, literally family friends of ours, and my team, have given me so much hope. Because I really felt about 2 years ago, especially after the altercation with the police minister, I was really fed up with the police. And then suddenly so many cops started calling me and saying, hey, we've got information we want to share. And they came forward and they spoke, and they get really badly intimidated. I mean, some of them sometimes get killed because they speak out. It really motivated me. And I just decided that, wait a minute, we need to scale this. We can't just fight on a small level. We need to scale this, because if they can hang in there and they've got hope and they can speak out, then why am I getting so tired? So they just motivated me so much, and it would be such an honor for me to, and whether it's opposition or not, it would be such a massive honor for me to try and serve those good cops that still wear that uniform, because I promise you, the majority of them are good people, and we need to do what we can to help them.
And personal safety, from your perspective, and I ask this in the context of what happened to the chief whip at the Mgeni, Chris Pappas' municipality, who was murdered in his home.
Yeah, so just from a, I believe in God. He's my foundation, my wife and I have made a conscious decision to live without fear. And it's not necessarily always that you are without fear. You go pray about it then, but that's how we approach it. I'm not naive to it, but I'm also not going to look over my shoulder the whole time. We need to do what we need to do. And again, the more of us that speak out and do these things, the smaller the chance of the intimidation. We also shouldn't ever overestimate the opposition. When I say the opposition, I mean specifically the ANC. I think people see this high and mighty body, but they are very broken and very divided. And we need to hit them very hard, not only with the election, but from civil society as well. I see Wayne Devenage sitting there. Hello, Wayne. And the way I always follow what Alta says and does, and super outspoken. And those are the bodies, whether it's Alta, it's AfriForum. I used to work for AfriForum, with any of those civil rights organizations, and specifically the way that Alta has recently also come out very, very verbally and strongly with certain issues, the chances of safety being at risk, I think it decreases just because of the sheer amount of people that that stand together.
Yeah, Wayne's going to be talking this afternoon, and I'm particularly looking forward to that one too. But to get back to some of the issues that you were talking about, hope or hopelessness, serve or be served, in KZN in July 2021, people had to make a decision, and pretty much everybody in the middle class got involved. My brother-in-law, who's 70, was there with his hockey stick because he doesn't own a gun. I know you'd say he should actually have a gun.
Absolutely. I'll get his number.
And he was there with other members of the community defending their turf, which many people did not think would happen. Did that spark something? Perhaps we just can even in KZN now, apart from a boost to the semigration of those who've left there and come to safer parts of the country.
Yeah, certainly. It definitely did. We mustn't underestimate how broken the South African Police Service really is. And this is just from a policing point of view. They knew what was coming. Crime Intelligence did warn them. They knew this, but at that time, it was more important for the National Commissioner and the Minister of Police to fight about tenders on the inside and other quarrels instead of focusing on the job that needs to be done on the ground. What was so amazing and gave me so much hope out of that, obviously the destruction was terrible, but what really inspired me was how cops and citizens worked together despite the odds against them. I mean, the amount of ammunition that was flown in and transported to help private security and the police, because they were completely out of ammo. Remember, this wasn't just rubber being shot. This was real sharp-end ammo being used. And it was fascinating to see how South Africans just stepped up. And another thing that I love, what Harry said earlier, I just wanted to add to it. We shouldn't underestimate how resilient South Africans are. He says people are a lot more negative in other places than they are here. But it's kind of a Dricus du Plessis thing. They don't know what we know. The resilience amongst our people is just fascinating. I spoke to an old lady in Rocklands in the Cape Flats the other night, and they held a moment. I don't know if I've told you the story, but they had a moment of silence for two cops that had been killed. And I asked her afterwards, I said to her, how do you stay so positive and hopeful? She said to me, Ian, I've got nowhere else to go. I have to make it work here. And I've made a conscious decision to see what I can do to make this place better. And I thought, geez, if she can say this after having 2 moments of silence in one evening, then surely we can dig a little deeper. But that is the resilience of South Africans. And it's something remarkable about our people. And it's across the board. South Africans just keep on surviving. They make plans. They move forward despite the odds. So, back to July 2021, I think it sparked something also that showed people that, hey, you shouldn't just be state dependent. A lot of what David said yesterday in his talk, David and Sara, is exactly that. And I think it's good that communities organize themselves that way, because that also forces government, no matter where, if it's local, provincial or national, but it forces them to understand that people aren't just going to stand back. They're not just going to watch and see. They're all going to get involved. And I think that's fantastic.
Now, when you get to parliament, you'll have parliamentary privilege. You've already been outspoken. Can we expect that you're going to push it up a level or two with no libel possibilities?
I wouldn't necessarily say I'd push it up. I'm just going to keep talking. So it won't change in that sense. We need to unveil and expose the rot, because it really is deep. And there's so many great people that speak out. And I think to me, it's going to be a great opportunity to do that. But the one thing that's important, it's about accountability as well. And I think that's the very important part, is that it's a great opportunity to try and keep the relevant officials accountable and to really take them on about it. I mean, to give you an idea, I mean, SAPS has lost, what, just over 30,000 firearms in the last 10 to 15 years? 30,000 firearms. I mean, that's massive. We're looking...
They lost.
You can make the assumption, Alec. No, I mean, over 9,000 of them could be confirmed sold just with the Chris Prinsloo scandal. So... And that was just in the Western Cape. I think it was over 100 children that were, I can't remember all the numbers off by heart now, that were killed with those firearms, you know, teenagers and so on. The point I'm trying to make is that we need to expose this. We need to talk about it. No matter how much we can never say it enough. I think the crucial part is that when we say it, we need to talk about the solutions as well, because otherwise we're just going to be nagging the whole time. And my wife always reminds me not to just nag. I thought it should be the other way around, but not in our house. It's crucial that we keep speaking and then that we focus on the solutions.
You know, it's very exciting having been at this conference and seeing the talent in the political ranks that is going to be in parliament. You can see Herman Mashaba is going to make a difference, no question. Muzi Maimane going back into parliament is definitely going to make a difference. Ayanda Ali, who was here earlier, she's going to be someone who's on a different level. Yourself and Gayton McKenzie, he's not going to be sitting back for anybody, although I think he wants to be the premier rather than, but even Charles Siliers, who works with him. These are people who are of a different, almost a different caliber to what we've had in Parliament up to now. And when you, I had a guy who invested in a business in MoneyWeb before we listed it, a very, very astute international investor. And he said, what I believe in doing is putting smart people into a room and just letting the oxygen flow. Now, if you've got all of these people coming together, to me, it gives me hope. Maybe there is a divine plan that's in action here, because suddenly our center of governance is going to have maybe a different level of debate. Do you share that?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I hope the oxygen can flow in Parliament, because if the aircon doesn't work, then it gets a little bit... I absolutely agree with you. What's great to me about it is the different kinds of people that are saying, but we're going to roll up our sleeves. And it excites me that people come from all different backgrounds, whether it's business, civil society, etc. I think that's fantastic. It changes the status quo. I think the exciting part to me as well is that it's a way of of really keeping whoever is responsible for a specific portfolio, and again, from my side, it will always be the criminal side of things, keeping them accountable, exposing it, etc. So it excites me. I also like the fact that there are so many different entities. I'm not a huge fan of the whole every single person has a little party now. But for example, everyone that spoke here, I think, has a phenomenal role to play. And it excites me that everyone has a different approach. And that's important because that can actually help us to cross-pollinate and to see how we can form a, let's call it a web, for lack of a better word, that can kind of engulf this the problems that we face.
Coalition politics. We're in a new era. And I think that was the other thing that came through here very, very clearly. But it's nice that we're going into coalition politics with a few adults in the room and certainly an elevated IQ to what we did have in the past. Okay, time for you guys to ask your questions of Ian. Let's kick off.
Hi, hello Ian. I'm a firm believer in the, if you'd know that, the broken window policy of the mayor of
Giuliani.
Yes. Are you also a believer in that? Is that a strategic thing to perhaps consider in South Africa, with especially with when you look around our small little towns and stuff like that?
Certainly. I think there's a two-prong approach. You need to take it from top and bottom. You should actually, his book called Leadership is phenomenal, and it shows how the way that he grew up, how it influenced his thinking later on with the police in New York. So Rudolph Giuliani's leadership book is brilliant. If we do that, Hermanus is a good example. They really push bylaws that you can't, for example, urinate publicly on a sidewalk. And it was really well enforced, and you go to the municipal court if you do, and eventually there's a whole process to keep you accountable. It sounds like a silly thing, but I know it irritates so many people across the country when you walk somewhere and that's all you smell. It's being a bit, crude, I guess, but those are the frustrations that so many people face. But I think it's tackling those things, the broken window principle, because then you have a beautiful little town like we're seeing in Hermanus, for example. But then there's a crucial part, and that is tackling organized crime. We spoke about it with a multi-party charter yesterday, and I think everyone in here would agree that something like the Scorpion should return. It's of crucial importance, and it's simple why it was disbanded, because then the ANC would be caught out. And that's why they don't want the police to work, because then they would be caught out for their own corrupt doing. So it's tackling it from the bottom with bylaws, etc., and then it's tackling it at the top and really focusing on organized crime, like poaching and brying on the rocks.
You talk about taking control of your own space. So a lot of these neighborhood watches try to do that, but you're kind of fighting against a brick wall. You're hitting your head against a brick wall. So often you want to clean up the mess, as you said, clean up the litter. You want a little bit of support by the police. You're not getting it. You've got tick dealers here and there. You can't move them. And if they do go onto the railway lines, then Praza says, no, that's our space. You can't go there. What are you supposed to do?
Just keep on going. I'm going to tell you, give you a good example. So I don't know if you remember a few years ago, there was a massive protest at the Wofford High School in Gauteng and Vereeniging. And at some stage, the headmaster called and he said, well, security companies are pulling out at that stage because it's become a whole so-called race thing. Anthea, very good example last night with a talk about how race is manipulated or abused for some kind of, whether it's political or social gain of some sort. And what we then did, we sent a team of about, I think it was a team of 26 or 27 people. And what we would do with this protest, it lasted almost 10 days. You easily had between 1,000 and 2,500 protesters. And they were wreaking havoc. I mean, they were breaking the sidewalks apart. They were breaking road signs out. But every night when they would leave, we had a cleanup team that cleaned everything up. And when they got there the next morning, the destruction was gone. And by day four, they stopped breaking anything because they got tired of breaking and it not lasting. I'm not saying it's like that everywhere. And I'm not saying it's the perfect solution. All I'm saying is just don't stop. And I know, I always joke in Afrikaans and I say, you always have, you have very simple seven wat opdag. You know, you've got the same simple seven people in the community that always show up for the patrol, that always show up to the meeting with the community policing forum. And so, and I understand that completely. But I promise you that if you, along with the suburb next to you and the suburb next to you, start taking hands in that way, we can win. It works. I mean, years back, we did that in Bloemfontein. When I was still at AfriForum, and we eventually had our own paramedic vehicle there, and it was sponsored by private hospitals, and we had an intermediate life support vehicle there because that was the need. And just by keeping going, that we need to destabilize the criminal comfort, because at the moment they're comfortable. The cops know where they are. It's a perfect example that the Provincial Commission in the Western Cape today is sitting in Saldanha. While and this morning alone, just in Mitchell's Plain, five people were shot. Last night, 11. So as I said earlier, so it's a perfect example. They're too comfortable. And by doing simple things and showing up, you can destabilize them. The last thing, sorry, Alec, that I must mention on that is in White River, quite a few years ago too, what the neighborhood watched it there is that they would patrol day and night, but then at night they combined it with cleanup projects. And it got to the point where it became kind of contagious, you know, more and more people got involved. So at night, they had a small team with a little truck and they would do cleanup projects. And eventually, I don't know if it lasted, I hope so. I haven't been there in a long time. But eventually, they took hands with the municipality. So, the municipalities should have just done their job, I guess. But that's the start of devolving things, bring it back to the community. And if you can build those partnerships positively, it's a great opportunity.
Yeah, thank you very much. That was very, very interesting and fantastic work you're doing. Keep it up. I know you've been made famous by the minister, but keep it up and keep going. One of the things I wanted to point out was the matter of illegal firearms in South Africa. I'm originally a Natal boy. I don't live here now, but I've got friends of mine in Natal who tell me that the trade in illegal firearms and the movement of illegal firearms into private ownership in Natal is actually becoming quite an issue. One, because they can't get licenses from the DFO, and two, because there's no ballistics. And in anticipation of any trouble coming, the attraction of owning an illegal firearm is actually something that offers merit. What do you believe is the process that's going to go to start removing and getting some of these illegal firearms off the streets? Because whether in private ownership or whether in ganglands, they are not doing us any good at all.
Yeah, and it's a lot of guns. We're looking at, from what I read at the end of last year, I think it's about 3.2 or 3.3 million illicit firearms circulating between South Africa, southern Mozambique, and Zimbabwe. So, 3.2 million firearms, that's massive. It's a big issue. In terms of the DFO at the moment with the police, it's running quite smoothly. The problem is it's not a proper digital system. They're still so focused on paper. You know, the police has a very old-fashioned way of doing. So I think there's a lot to do just to better that. Again, when you look at the I've forgotten the full name, but this new body, the Transnational Network Against Organized Crime or something. Sorry, I've forgotten the name. But when you read their data and their research, it clearly shows that SAPS has this high volume of people, but low impact arrest, low impact cases that they take on, and we need to flip the script on that, and we need to close in on the supply of these firearms. You can see it now. I mean, this gang war happening in the Cape Flats, since very prominent gang leaders were arrested at the end of last year, there's this turf battle going on in different parts. And I mean, we must ask, where do they get the amount of ammo and things and firearms that they use? But I agree with you. There's no simple answer, in my opinion. The first two things that I would focus on is the specialized unit side. Look into organized crime in that case. I mean, SAPS in 2019, I think they lost 10 million rounds of ammunition, 10 or 11 million rounds lost. So, yeah, we need to question that. So when I say tackle organized crime, it includes the South African Police Service, unfortunately.
Wow.
I remember that
just after democracy in South Africa, there was a thing called Gun-Free South Africa, where there was this project that if you had a firearm, you'd take it in, and I think they melted it down, but maybe they didn't. From what you're saying now, they might have got their way back in. But would something of that nature ever work?
The irony of Gun-Free South Africa is that the person that founded it has armed response at her house. So I don't think Gun-Free South Africa is a... I personally think it's a joke. But I'm biased in that respect. I don't think it can work the way it is now. Look, if you want to hand in your firearm, it's your full right. So there's that. That's not the debate. I think the question to me is, how do we keep the people that should destroy the firearm accountable? So SAI, the Southern African Agri Initiative, launched a campaign now, and they actually got a judgment, I think it was last week, in the High Court in Pretoria, that said that SAPS must supply them with data to confirm that the 50,000 firearms that they said that they destroyed last year were actually destroyed, and that every single one of those firearms were destroyed. Because here's the problem, and this is how Chris Prinsloo did it so successfully, that no station in South Africa has a scale to weigh the amount of firearms that you're transporting to Vereeniging for Destruction. So now they just drive. They get there. On the book, it says 10 guns. Meanwhile, he just hands in 8. No one weighs it. No one checks it. They can manipulate the books. So you don't really know how many guns actually are destroyed. And again, it comes back to modernizing it, professionalizing the police, and so on and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah. When you start looking at the leaks in the system and how that is almost Eskom-like, as De Reiter wrote in his book, where the guys would arrive with the coal, but actually that there wasn't coal there. There was a lot of rocks, which then had an impact as well. But with guns, if that gets into the wrong hands, they kill 100 kids.
Absolutely.
Ian, thank you. Question, with the exception maybe of Chris Pappas in Vienna in the Taal, the DA does not seem to be a natural home for a talented, effective maverick as you are. If anything, they are handbrakes for new solutions and novel thinking, out-of-the-box ways. Are you comfortable with the DA as a political home?
Yeah, definitely. At the moment, I am. I'm very excited about it. And there's a personal link to this as well that I want to share with all of you, is that when the discussion started and we spoke and so on, it was made abundantly clear that I just need to do what I do. And obviously, it can be political of nature. I understand that it could be used for marketing and so on. And so I'm not, I understand it. But that being said, so far, it really has been a very wide canvas to be able to focus on that. And I must say that everything that I proposed upon their request has been used and has been considered and very well accepted. Again, the proof is in the pudding. No one can predict the future, but I feel very comfortable at the moment. I think what excites me about it, there's a lot that excites me today. But what excites me about it is again the proof of good governance that has happened in the past. It excites me to see the renewal over the last few years. It excites me to see people like Silje Brink, Jordan Lewis, Siviwe. I mean, I watched one of Siviwe's speeches yesterday, and when I spent time with her, she's a machine. She's fantastic. And when I start looking at these young leaders and everyone that's stepping up, stepping forward, I think it's very positive for the DA, but it's positive for South Africa. So for now, I think it's a good thing. And I like having the depth and the support. Let me ask you like this. If, say, for example, someone with 10% of the size of, for example, the DA were to get into government tomorrow, and how would they actually govern? Now, please don't hear something that I'm not saying. I'm not insinuating that anyone else is necessarily bad. All I'm saying is that administrative and logistical depth, experience and so on, and the renewal over the last few years was phenomenal. And I I love the fact that so often the diversity is questioned. You know, some of the media have this preconceived question. They predecide to say that the DA is either too white or too this. But when you go to a federal congress of the DA and you walk in there, it's 85% not white. And when you see the way that people work together there in an orderly fashion, it's phenomenal. So no party is perfect, and we all know that. I'm not perfect either. Alec, I'm sure Jeanette would say that you're not perfect either. But
don't open that door, please.
I'm excited about what the future holds.
What are they saying inside the DA about the election? What's your? I mean, obviously we won't ask you for secrets, but what's the feeling?
It's a lot more positive than what I felt before. It sounds like I'm stuck on being excited, but it's really good to hear the way that they speak about it. And there's this synergy. Yesterday they launched a manifesto in the Eastern Cape, and the way that it was accepted was brilliant. So it really seems that it's gaining a lot of momentum, and they feel very, very positive for the election. And it's been a hell of a ride. I think, you know, speaking, let me put my Action Society hat on for a minute. Speaking from the outside, considering the last election, to get the momentum that the DA has gotten and is getting in certain places again now after what happened previously, that's a lot of work that needs to be done. And I think we should commend them. And this is where the Action Society hat, believe it or not. But I think it's important to commend that, because it really took a lot of work and a lot of dedication to say, but we're stepping forward, we need to fix this. Again, back in the arena.
In 1994, the run-up to 1994, I had the privilege for a brief period when the ANC was unbanned, when the national broadcaster became a national broadcaster rather than a state broadcaster or a politically managed broadcaster, to work at the SABC. And I can tell you from that experience, what we saw, there wasn't going to be an election. There was going to be chaos. There was terrible things that happened there. We had Bapura Tswana, which was referred to by Corne Mulder. We had Boipatong. There were fights within KZN. People were being killed. And yet, there was some, I still believe, divine intervention that brought us through. Is that part of what's driving you forward, that you think that there could be some bigger hand at play here? Because when we stack it up logically, South Africa looks like it's in a really bad place with the continuation of socialism and the downward spiral. But you've gone into this potential abyss with your eyes wide open.
I wouldn't be able to forgive myself if in 20 years I look back and I say, could I have done something? And I'm not talking about as just Ian. I'm saying that could we have, you know, taken on this issue and addressed it somehow? So that's the first thing. I was very skeptical before we made the decision. And then Carla's my wife. We really spent a lot of time talking about it and considering and so on and so forth. I believe there is a bigger hand. When exactly that is not my say, because I can't determine his time. But I think, and I can see through the resilience of South Africans, that we do have a way of making things better. Frans Grenier's model of enclaves over the last few years, and he's been saying it for quite a while, makes a lot of sense to me. I don't think we should think that overnight things will just be perfect. I think we're a long, long, long way from that, if ever. But I honestly think South Africa can move forward with really solid, large enclaves of places that flourish and that play a significant role to not only build a better future, but actually being part of that better future. I think it's possible. Whether it's right now, I'm not straight up politically savvy enough. Maybe I shouldn't say that on a microphone. But my focus will always stay on the crime element of things. But it's positive to see the way that the momentum is growing. And I think everyone knows we need change. Something needs to happen.
And when you go into the areas that you work in, because you look with Action Society, you look after those people who have got no voice, those people who have been really badly abused and beaten and murdered, well, the families of the murdered victims. Do you feel, do you get a sense there, and I'm trying to see how this might have influenced your decision to go into politics, that there's a real demand and desperation for change?
Yeah, certainly. There's no doubt about that. 95% of my team and my work is in township, and not specifically just townships, the worst townships. So you can go in the top 10 worst areas in the country, and we've got cases in most of those. And when you go and look at the situation there, it's very, very clear. I think so many people have just kind of accepted the status quo. They've become so hopeless that even though they say they want change, it's almost like they don't believe that they can achieve it. So it's important for us to literally speak hope to people, to tell them the whole idea of serving others, being on the side of hope, that kind of thing. I don't just say that to the minute Ola Klinkney. It's something that we literally have to intentionally decide to do. I get the impression that they want change. What I also like is that political differences aside, you know, in Khayelitsha, for example, there's a specific murder case. I think it was in court again last week. Happened 2 years ago, and the suspect appeared, or the accused appeared again this past week. And the interesting thing is, when our female investigators have to go to that court, we call the EFF team there to make sure that they are safe. I mean, the two different poles. We differ, you know, day and night. I can't stand the EFF, but I think with specific circumstances, we've got an end goal of making South Africa secure. And I think if we can approach it with that type of approach, it can work.
Thank you, Ian Cameron.